This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Will Smith is a Hollywood power player, one of the few stars who can lure audiences in large numbers to his films, especially on opening weekend, and especially when he stars in summertime action blockbusters, like Independence Day and his two Men in Black films. He's also starred in less showy films, such as 6 Degrees of Separation, the biographical film Ali, and his latest film, the romantic comedy Hitch. But Smith got his start as a teenage rapper in Philadelphia, teaming up with DJ Jazzy Jeff and calling himself the Fresh Prince. Smith parlayed the success of his fun, non-threatening, and even self-deprecating rap recordings into a hit TV show. The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air lasted from 1990 to 96, and its first season has just been released on DVD. Long before Ryan left Chino for the O.C., Smith played a sassy Philly kid who felt like a fish out of water after moving to California, an only slightly fictionalized version of Smith himself. Before we hear Terry's interview with Will Smith, let's listen to a clip from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. His cousin Carlton, played by Alfonso Ribeiro, is rehearsing with his a cappella group when Will and his friend Jazz, played by his real-life recording partner DJ Jazzy Jeff, walk in.
She's a brick house. She's mighty, mighty. She's just letting it all hang out. She's a brick house. Lady stacked, and that's a fact. And there isn't anything wrong with that.
Let's take 5, guys.
Will, was that really necessary?
Oh, I'm sorry, Carl. You thought I was laughing at you?
It's what it sounded like.
Oh, no. See, when I laugh at you, it's more like this. Just for future reference.
Man, y'all butchered that song.
Hey, see, I'm telling you, if the Commodores heard you singing, they'd tie you down to the tracks and run you over with the Soul Train.
Understand why you're threatened. After all, you two possess absolutely no musical ability. Face it, you're so jealous you're green.
All right, but just out of curiosity, Carlton, what color are you?
Oh, here we go again. Look, just because I grew up in the best neighborhoods and pronounce the ing's at the end of my words doesn't make me any less black than you.
No, it's that tie that does it.
Look, faces, see, I'm telling you, if you went down to Jazz's neighborhood looking the way you look and talking the way you talk, you wouldn't come home walking the way you walk.
And what neighborhood is that?
Compton.
And if you can make it there, you'll make it anywhere.
A scene from the sitcom The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. The first season has just been released on DVD. Terry spoke with Will Smith in 2001. She asked him about his days growing up in Philadelphia and his early success as the Fresh Prince.
Your early raps were very funny, very self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. And this was a time in rap. I mean, I guess it's always been that time in rap where raps have been mostly about either bragging about how great your rhymes are, bragging about what a great lover you are, or bragging about how tough you are, or how many women you have, whatever. But your really breakthrough record, Parents Just Don't Understand, was about getting taken to the shopping mall by your mother who wants to buy you all these awful clothes that are going to ruin your credibility. Mm-hmm. In fact, why don't we hear a little bit of that?
You know, parents are the same no matter time, no place. They don't understand that us kids are going to make some mistakes. So to you other kids all across the land, there's no need to argue. Parents just don't understand. School shopping. It was me, my brother, my pop, and my little sister all hopped in the car. We headed downtown to the Gallery Mall. My mom started bugging with the clothes she chose. I didn't say nothing at first. I just turned to my nose. She said, "What's wrong? This shirt costs $20. I said, "Mom, the shirt is plaid with a butterfly collar." The next half hour was the same old thing. My mother buying me clothes from 1963, and then she lost her mind and did the ultimate. I asked her for Adidas and she bought me Zips. I said, "Mom, what are you doing? You ruined my rep." She said, "You're only 16. You don't have a rep yet." I said, "Mom, let's put
put these clothes back, please. She said, no, you go to school to learn, not for a fashion show.
That's the Fresh Prince, Will Smith. Will Smith, how did you end up taking that direction in your early rap records and going the self-deprecating route and admitting that you had a mother? I mean, most rap records don't admit they even have a mother. But,
well, you know, really, I was coming out of the early years of rap music, which were less about being tough and more about parties. So, I mean, it was still out. What I was doing was still sort of out of place. But I was younger making rap records than a lot of the people that were my peers in the rap world at that time. So I was basically an old school rapper with a new school crowd. So the style was based on there was a guy when I was coming up named Grandmaster Caz, and Grandmaster Caz used to make his party rhymes, but everything was always funny, and his rhymes always had a comedic edge to them. And essentially, I created my entire style after Grandmaster Caz. But I mean, he was as rare as I was. But the style is essentially based on being different. It's based upon doing something that will stand out and be as different as it could possibly be from all the other records that were being created at the time.
Now, did the persona on that record suit your real personality? I mean, was your mother really taking you to the gallery, the shopping mall in Philadelphia, and buying you the wrong sneakers?
Oh yeah, my mom, you know, she's really good at a lot of things, but the whole combination of clothes with the shoes, yeah, my mom wasn't like the best at that. You're good at it, Mom, now. But oh wow, you're in Philly, right? Yeah, so yeah. My mom's gonna be okay. Yeah, Mom, you weren't great at it, but you were good. But yes, it was tough some days, and it was even worse for my brother, because then after I was done with the stuff, he had to wear it old. At least I got to wear it new.
Well, how would you wear the wrong clothes to school? I mean, when you knew you were wearing clothes that you hated, mm-hmm. that other people. That your friends would hate too.
Yeah, that's
that would make you look foolish. Yeah, what do you do so that you can still not look foolish in spite of what you're wearing?
You just hope that somebody else has worse clothes than you, so you know, so then you can ride them. And I was always pretty funny, so that being funny was a pretty good defense, because even if someone had nicer clothes on me, I could make the crowd think that their clothes were worse than mine just by the jokes.
Like what? What would you say?
Oh, God, anything. I remember when Haggar washable slacks came out. And that's, you know, if you called somebody's pants Haggar washable reversible slacks, you know, and you just, you know, you show them flipping them inside and out. They wear them one way on Monday and flip them inside out on Tuesday. You know, and if, like, you know, you act that out physically, then you could generally make people laugh with that.
No, you weren't from a poor family. Your mother worked for the school board. Your father owned a refrigeration business. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that being, you know, did it feel like it would be more authentic if you did rap records if you were poor? You know, because sometimes authenticity in rap has been equated with being poor and being from a neighborhood where there's a lot of gang banging.
Well, I mean, the neighborhood that I was from was, you know, working class neighborhood. I mean, we had our share of shootings and drug dealers. So, I mean, essentially, I am from the same type of neighborhood that those people are from. I just had I took a different approach. You know, there wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that I embraced. You know, I avoided the drug dealers and avoided the dudes shooting craps on the corners and all of that. It just wasn't something that I I chose to embrace, but it was definitely something that was a part of my neighborhood.
You're really good with rhymes, and your recordings tend to tell interesting stories. I mean, they could almost mm-hmm. be a sketch. Mm-hmm. Did you ever write stories?
Yeah, when I was probably 12 years old, 13 years old, I used to write stories about my friends, and I would make them superheroes, and I would sell them. I would sell them their story, you know, Super Terry. You know,
what powers you want to give me?
Yeah, you know, that's what we would talk about, and we'd figure out what powers that you wanted to have and stuff like that. And then I would write a story where the kids were superheroes, and you know, sell them for, you know, 50 cents or a dollar or something like that. But I was doing that probably 12 years old to about 14 years old. I was doing that. My mother worked for the school board, and my grandmother was very much into education. So we were always writing and creating stories or reading Bible verses. We were always doing something literary.
Did you always have satisfied customers, or did your friends ever say, I didn't like the story, I want my 50 cents back?
Well, I would never, we didn't do refunds, but we would we would rewrite the story, you know, if you wanted a story adjustment. You know, I wasn't above a rewrite.
I guess that's good experience.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you can't get a cheese back.
So with your mother working for the school board, did she correct you a lot if you used improper grammar?
Oh, yeah, we were.
Or slang in your speech?
Yeah, we weren't allowed to use improper speech. You know, you would run out of the house and say, "Yo, what's up? What y'all about to do?" And mother say, "Up, back in here, back." We would get on punishment for words like "y'all," and you know, you'd be in the house in the middle of the summer crying, and my grandmother would come up and say, "Baby, you know a y'all is a boat."
did that irritate you, or did you think, oh, I'm so glad that she's teaching me proper speech?
You know, yeah, it was, you know, that's, yeah, 12 years old. Oh, yeah, you know what? You're right, Grandma.
You're right.
Proper speech. That's, no, it was tough, but that's something I've adapted in my life. I can't stop doing that to other people and to my kids. But I mean, very, very early, I remember that. I mean, it was just always important in my household to say things properly. I mean, in my neighborhood, kids would say, looked it. And my grandmother hated that, you know. You know, kids, oh, he looked it crazy. Oh, man. My grandmother hated that. And that was one that you'd almost get a 30-day punishment for that one. If you said something looked it like something, woo!
Do you feel bilingual?
Well, you mean bilingual in the sense of King's English and Ebonics?
Yeah.
Or English and Spanish?
No.
No. yeah, you know, there's a certain bilingual element that all successful blacks have to have. You know, you have to be able to you know, speak to the head of IBM in a way that gives confidence and communicates a sense of your commitment to excellence and perfection, and it all starts with language. But at the same time, you got to be able to relax and chill with your friends.
Will Smith, speaking with Terry Gross in 2001. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's return to Terry's interview with actor Will Smith. She spoke with him in 2001 about his starring role in the film Ali. Here's an early scene in the movie. Muhammad Ali, then still going by the name Cassius Clay, is weighing in, preparing to fight Sonny Liston, and taunting Liston with his rhymes.
Sonny Liston, you ain't no champ. You're a chump. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Ah! Rumble, young man, rumble. Y'all want to lose y'all money? Then you bet it on Sonny. He know I'm great. He will fall in eight. Come on, you big ugly bear. I'll whoop you right now.
Two ten and a half. 210 and a half. The challenger, Cassius Clay, 210 and a half pounds.
Man, you showed us right. Oh, ugly bear. Come on, let's go. You got all these folks fooled. I ain't scared of you.
218. Sonny Liston, the champion of the world. 218 pounds.
Pounds of what?
Pounds of ugly. That man's so ugly, when he sweat, the sweat run backwards off his forehead just to stay away from his face. Come on, you big ugly bear, I'll turn you into a rug.
So what did you have to do different to get Ali's voice when Ali was doing his rhymes or just, you know, doing his bragging thing?
Well, essentially, his voice, he has a really big, wide open chest, which gives you that really heavy resonance, but he constricts his throat, which gives you a really sort of higher pitch, nasally sound. So I had dialect instructors that were teaching me how to technically where to place my tongue and how to hold my teeth and all of that in order to create the sound that Muhammad Ali created with his voice. So I mean, after a while it became natural, but in the beginning it was really, you know, constricted and really affected, and, you know, trying to stand up straight and trying to keep my chin down and all of those special little tricks that they taught me to create the sound.
Can you demonstrate what you did with your voice?
Can I demonstrate? Well, then I'd have to charge you my full fee.
Right. Well, fair enough. Were you much of a fighter?
Not really. I never was a good fighter, but I guess at about 12 or 13 years old, I was in school and I got into a fight in school with a guy named Jason Murphy, and he punched me square in the middle of my nose with all he had, and I realized that it only took a second for me to clear up. And while I was standing there realizing that it didn't really hurt that bad, he punched me again. And I was, it was a strange moment, but it was when I discovered that I could take a punch. And the second that I realized I was like comfortable getting hit, I became a better fighter tenfold. And I think that really helped me in this project, that not being scared to get hit is the center of what makes a fighter be able to be in a rugged war in the ring, because you already know that you're going to get hit. So your approach to that, you got to be in a position to get hit in order to hit somebody. That mindset of not running and not being scared is hugely important to be successful in the ring.
What has that actually, have you needed that? Have people ever tried to challenge you because you're famous and because you're self-deprecating in some of your rhymes? They figure, well, yeah, I can take him.
Well, a whole lot now that I played Ali.
Right.
So that, yeah, you know, now that's what Sylvester Stallone told me that too. You know, when I talked to him and I told him I was doing Ali, he said, oh man, he said, every movie theater and bar and mall in the country, everybody's going to want to fight you now.
Isn't that annoying? I mean, they just feel like saying to the world, it's a movie.
Well, no, the thing is, if you drop one person real good and try to get hard copy or something to get it on tape, it'll be cool.
Right, right. Might as well make it pay. So did you have to actually take punches for the shoot?
Yeah, we decided very early on that there would be no movie fighting in this film, that all of the fighting was going to be real punches, real fighting. We would essentially do it like a stunt. You know, you set it up, you get five or six cameras going, and when we got in the ring, you know, we looked at each other, gave each other a pound, and went at it.
Now, when Ali got punched, he didn't know that this was going to happen a few minutes before it did. Whereas, you know, in this scene, you get hit hard. So does that help or not to know that it's coming?
Yeah, that's worse. That is much worse. That's what I told Ali. You know, I told him making this movie was way tougher than any of those fights that he had in real life. I said, you didn't know Joe Frazier was about to knock you down, but I knew James Toney was about to clip me good.
So what do you do to prepare for that?
You bite down on your mouthpiece really hard. Could be you don't want to have your mouth hanging open when you get hit. And you know, you'd be surprised how, and it's a really weird feeling. I know it sounds bizarre, but there's something that's really cathartic about getting hit and standing up.
What was the worst punch you took?
It was the James Toney left hook, the one where Ali gets knocked down by Joe Frazier. Because essentially, I just, you know, we had all agreed earlier that again, there's no movie fighting. So I went to James Toney before we did it, and I said, listen, you know, this is for our families. This is for our children. This is for Ali's legacy. I said, so don't play with it. Go ahead, throw the punch in there. Let's get it good, and let's go home. And I, you know, and he said, all right, man, I'll let it happen. I said, oh, and by the way, and then I just punched him in the nose right before the take. And he was like, okay. But that may not have been the best idea. It got the, because he laid into it pretty nicely on me.
Will Smith, speaking with Terry Gross in 2001. The first season of his TV series, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, is now out on DVD. And he's starring in the new romantic comedy, Hitch. I'm David Bean Cooley, and this is Fresh Air.